our action to make sure we protect people.
Congressmember Ellison, we just have a minute, and I want to ask you about the Democratic Platform Committee. It's believed that Senator Sanders is going to throw his support to Hillary Clinton tomorrow in New Hampshire. They're going to have a joint meeting there and press conference. What happened at the Platform Committee? Are you satisfied with the Democratic platform? You were one of Sanders' representatives on that committee.
Am I satisfied? No, because I tend not to be. I have a thirst for justice, and I'm always striving in that direction. But am I happy, and do I believe this is the most progressive platform that I've ever seen? The answer to that is resoundingly yes. I think that Bernie Sanders, through his campaign, through the appointments he made to the Platform Drafting Committee and the Platform Committee, has set forth a set of ideals for the Democratic Party, which will attract, excite, electrify the base. And I think that we've made dramatic steps forward, 15 in a union, indexed. We have the strongest statement that I think we could get against TPP. We did not come out with a total rejection of it, but we set up standards that it clearly does not meet. And said that that any trade agreement must meet these standards. Which
we're going to talk about
meet.
The rest of the platform and post online at democracynow.org. Congressmember Ellison, thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. This Thursday, on July 14th, KBOO Community Radio is throwing a one-day marathon membership drive. You'll have from 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. to support KBOO programs and specials like interviews with the author of Becoming a Citizen Activist, the KBOO Evening News segment on Enron, as well as live broadcasting some of the best reggae jams from Fire on the Mountain. Help us reach our $20,000 goal. Go to kboo.fm/give right now. Coming up next is more talk radio with our hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott. Today we'll ask, how should parents talk to their children about issues of police violence and institutional racism?
Tune in to KBOO for a 25-hour fundraising extravaganza of special programming and community celebration. Democracy Now! Host Amy Goodman recently spoke in Portland on Democracy Now! 20 years covering the movements changing America. KBOO will broadcast this inspiring speech at 10 a.m. Again, that's 6 a.m. on July 14th through 7 a.m. on July 15th to support your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Thursday, July 14th, Shocks of Sheba will be broadcasting live from Fire on the Mountain as part of KBOO's 25-hour membership drive marathon. Tune in from noon to 4, or join us in person at Fire on the Mountain at 57th and Fremont in Northeast Portland. TJT from KBOO's Youth Collective will be joining us, blending his original hip-hop with the reggae vibes. It's community collaboration and celebration. That's Thursday, July 14th, from noon until 4 p.m. on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Good morning. Today is Monday, July 11th, 2016. And this is More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. And this is Cecil Prescott. I'll be joined shortly by my co-host, Celeste Carey. For those of you who are listening and would like to be a part of our conversations, our numbers are 503-231-8187. Well, all of you are aware of the events that have happened in our nations over the last week or so. I'm highlighting the continuing tensions in our communities as our community continues to wrestle for the attempt to create more justice in our world. Last week, I woke up and turned on Facebook, because Facebook is the source of all information for too many peoples in our nation. And I saw a post from my niece, Nicole, who had posted on Instagram, and she wrote, "When does it end? My son doesn't understand why I yell and I don't want him to do certain things. He'll never understand it because I'm scared for his life." My niece Nicole is the mother of a black teenage young male, and like too many mothers, she has had to try to protect him from from sources that are supposed to protect him. Before I begin my continue this, I want to preface this by saying that my father, for over 20 years, served as a New York City auxiliary police officer. So I'm well aware and of the duties and the responsibilities and the hazards that police officers face daily, on a daily basis. And too often, I remember my mom sitting up at night wondering about my dad and, waiting for him to come home and whether or not he would come home safely. But that was something that my father chose to do. My nephew, Jalen, just happens to be a young 16-year-old black male. And that's a reality he faces, and not quite sure of what he has to do. Steve is going to play a PSA that a black church in Chicago put out for its parishioners and the community from Trinity United Church of Christ. It's on YouTube. It's a powerful video, but you can sense its power by listening to these words.
10 rules.
10 rules.
10 rules.
10 rules of survival.
10 rules of survival if stopped by the police.
Number 1, be polite and respectful when stopped by the police.
Be polite.
Be respectful.
Remember that your goal is to get home safely.
Your goal is to get home safely.
Your goal is to get home safely. I'm sorry.
Number 2, if you feel your rights have been violated, you and your parents have a right to file a formal complaint with your local police jurisdiction.
Number 3, do not, under any circumstances, get in an argument with the police.
Number 4, always remember that anything you say or do can be used against you in court.
Number 5, keep your hands in plain sight.
Make sure the police can see your hands at all times.
Number 6, avoid physical contact with police officers. Do not make any sudden movements and keep your hands out of your pockets.
Number 7,
do not.
Do not.
Do not, do not, do not, do not.
Do not run, even if you are afraid.
Even if you're afraid.
Number 8, even if you believe you are innocent, do not resist arrest.
Number 9, if you are arrested, do not make any statements about the incident until you are able to meet with a lawyer or public defender.
Number 10, stay calm and remain in control.
Watch your words. Watch your body language.
Watch your emotions. Remember.
Remember.
Remember, your goal is to get home safely.
Get home safely.
That was from Trinity United Church of Christ in Chicago. It is posted on YouTube, and you can watch it. And finally, before I defer to my co-host Celeste, there is a post that Portland artist posted, S. Renee Mitchell. She posted it on July 9th, and she wrote, "Today I received the text I've been dreading. Mom, someone called the cops on me. See, my 20-year-old son works downtown at night. He issues parking tickets, so he's around parked cars for 8 to 10 hours a night. He wears a red shirt as a uniform. He walks slowly so he can check out which cars warrant a ticket. He holds a handheld black machine that records VIN numbers. He gets yelled at by his boss if he doesn't write enough parking tickets. He's a good, hard-working young man. But tonight, some good white citizens only saw a young black man walking around at night and called the police. He accused my sons of breaking into cars. I think about this situation every time my son leaves for work. It's a black mother's burden to worry that white people won't suppose my son has a knack for writing screenplays or that he has a dry wit and a tender heart. He is my youngest of three. I raise him to respect authority and know his people's histories. He's on the dean's list in college and works to contribute towards rent and his own phone bill. He waits up if I get home too late. Where were you? He asked me last night when I came in late from listening to live jazz at Jimmy Mack's. He worried about his mama's being safe. He is a loving son. Tonight, some good white citizens called 911 to say my son was breaking into cars in downtown Portland. I got his text and checked the time. It was an hour and a half after the fact. I had been in a meeting. I worried. Are you safe? I asked. I didn't stop looking at the phone until I got a reply. Yeah, he texts back. The cop was cool. Thank you, Portland cop, for asking questions and not assuming guilt, for seeing the humanity in this black woman's child. Thank you, God, for keeping my son safe from the bad assumption of good white citizens. Tomorrow, my son will be at work again. Like always, I will keep my phone close, my prayers fervent, and a listening ear for the front door to open and close before I can truly rest. I am the mother of a black son. I can never take peace for granted.
I'm kind of left speechless for similar reasons. I have a brother who is a disabled vet who suffers from post-traumatic stress and sometimes walks late at night trying to regain some moment of equilibrium, and I'm always afraid for him because he lives in Portland, Oregon, and he lives in Northeast Portland, Oregon, where black men are not supposed to live, you know, and that's right here. And then I have four grandsons, and I worry about them, and I try not to worry, you know. You try just to say prayers and not worry. But the question is, how do you talk to your children about police brutality, about violence, and help them to understand? And within the black community, you have people such as Rudy Giuliani pointing out that he believes that black parents don't teach their kids how to have respect for the police. And he ignores some 300 to 400 years of history in which black people have feared what I will call law enforcement, because it was designed to either bring them back to the abusive institution of slavery, or it was designed to keep them from being fully empowered within this democratic society we have. And you could not count on law enforcement to be fair, impartial, or even just. So you find yourself in an interesting situation. It's a conundrum. It's literally being on those horns, wherein you want to teach respect for authority, but authority has no respect for authority either, has no respect and no restraint in exercising a power. I can't even call it a legitimate power sometimes. And too often, historically, you find law enforcement closely aligned with organizations, if not the ideology of white supremacy or posse comitatus. So when you're trying to teach your child to respect authority that may be running amok, you find a difficult path to walk. And what you say is, these are the ideas, not maybe the person that's trying or pretending to uphold them, but these are the ideas that we want you to hold dear, and we want you to obey, and we want you to respect. And you try to frame it just as the public service announcement you heard in terms of getting home safely, because you want your child to have a moral framework that allows them to be a citizen that can contribute positively, but you also want them to be astute enough to recognize that in the adult world, in the real world, people don't necessarily act honestly, and there is what would you call it? I'll just call it a dishonesty and leave it at that, because I don't know what else to call it. Teaching your child even about things such as racism and institutional problems is like trying to explain that you have an abusive family member that you can't stop, who will do anything to your child, and you have no power to stop it, or very little power to stop it, but you love your child nonetheless, and they still have value. Now, just absorb that for a moment.
Yes. And certainly we want to open up this discussion, and this is certainly not an, this is not is,
it is not an issue.
It's not easy. It's an issue for all of us. Parents of black and brown children, as well as parents of white children. In our preparation, we came across an article by Courtney E. Martin, a white mother, who reflected on an article entitled "The Conversation We Must Have with Our White Children," and it's posted on our page on KBOO website. It goes like this: as news of the police murder of both Alton Sterling and Philando Castile hit the headlines this week, adults have rightly despair, and if they aren't, they damn well should be. But it is children who have expressed the purest forms of grief and courage tantamount to the tragedies we are witnessing and the challenges we are facing. Cameron Sterling, Alton Sterling's 15-year-old son, trying to cover up his sobs with the collar of his brightly striped T-shirt during a press conference, then bravely turning to the group of men, presumably family and friends, behind him to be embraced and comforted. Their big hands patted his back, the utter unadulterated heartbreak. "It's okay, Mama," Diamond Reynolds' 4-year-old daughter says in a Facebook Live video as her mother boyfriend Philando Castile screamed as he died in great pain. "It's okay. I'm right here with you." We are proving ourselves unworthy of these children when we, specifically white people, behave or talk as if racism no longer exists or as if it has nothing to do with us. We aren't just proving ourselves deeply and stubbornly ignorant about the continued realities of structural racism. about the legacies of violence and discrimination that still pump through our very own heart and bank accounts. But we neglect these children. We condone the violence they are confronting. We collude in their suffering, not to mention that of the adults who love them and are loved by them. What of our children? Are we worthy of them? Are we creating a world that conspires to make them moral citizens or moral sleepwalkers? I think about this as I watch the tweets roll in. Case in point, here's a conversation that I will never have to have with my children. Do whatever the man in uniform says. Don't make eye contact. Don't raise your voice. Don't reach into your pockets. Don't defend yourself. Don't resist. Pray like hell that someone records footage of the interaction. You might do all these things and still you might not be protected. The footage will foment current outrage, but it can do nothing to bring you back. Instead, she writes, I'm going to have some version of this conversation with my children for the rest of my life. As a white child, you are afforded a range of privileges and protection that children of color are not afforded, and it's important for you to recognize this and actively work to change it. This is deeply and historically rooted. This country was founded, yes, on optimism and pluralism, but also on slave labor, exploitation, violence, and dehumanization. Don't get bogged down in the guilt or shame of this history, but know it. Your story, our story, is a part of that. The only way to move on from that reality is to never move on. To understand that just as people of color have to spend a lifetime thinking about their own skin color and how it affects the way they are able to walk through the world, you are walking through the world, this country, this city, these streets as a white person. Make it a part of your daily consciousness, even when it seems tiring and burdensome. This is not a choice for people of color, nor is it for you. Commit to interrogating the privileges that you inherit and constantly look for creative ways to subvert hierarchies, redistribute power, connect the unconnected. Understand that this isn't about being a good white person. This is about being brave and convicted and imperfect and tireless and loving and devastated and sometimes feeling dumb about how to make change and taking it personally. You are not above bias and racism. Apologize when you say or do something racist. Shut up and ask questions. Make friends who will push you and hold you accountable.
Real friends.
Push and hold other white people accountable. Push and hold other white people accountable. Push and hold other white people accountable. These are the words of a white mother, Courtney E. Martin.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community connection, KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the city, 91.9 in points east, 104.3 in points south, and around the world, KBOO.FM, 503-231-8187 to join the conversation. And we'll go to our two callers who've been holding. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning. Can you guys hear me this morning?
Yes, we can.
First of all, thank you for your show. And I hear the pain in your voice this morning. And trust me, it's widespread. It's like I'm sick of it. I'm sick of hearing about it. I hate calling the show because I seem to call the show only when something's bad going down. But I'm someone who's lived in both worlds. I'm a man of color. I'm a black male. And I used to work in law enforcement. And I don't know what's happening in law enforcement right now. I mean, you have the city of Portland who, from what I understand, has a Nazi sympathizer still as a police officer. And there was a police officer, I believe, in Kansas City that was threatening a young black, a black child the other day. So I don't know what's happened in the past 15 years since I was in law enforcement until now. if they're just recruiting a certain type of person that has a certain level of ignorance. I don't know. I was former military. That's why I joined law enforcement. I was that typical, prototypical guy. And after I worked in that environment for a short amount of time, I left. I'm like, this isn't, I don't want to be part of this. Also, I like to talk, I keep hearing on the media how this is Obama's fault. And I'm trying to figure
I'm still trying to figure that one out myself.
Yeah, other than being a black man speaking on black issues, what did he do? Well, I know what he did. He basically destroyed the status quo, and you have people who were upset at that. I heard a cop the other day was like, you know, if Obama wouldn't be out there speaking on these issues, well, why can't he speak on these issues? Because that's all he's done is speak on the issues. There's been no legislation passed, not that he could anyway, but he's not supposed to even speak on these issues. I just find that to be just blatantly ignorant. And then to wrap it up, I don't have children yet. My wife is white, and I think over the past several days and weeks now, she gets it. And because I've told her, I want children, but if me as a black man and you as a white woman, we have a black, and I hate to say this, but if it's a black male child. If it's a black female, I still have to teach them certain things. But if it's a black male, I have to teach this child certain things that I don't want to have to teach it, you know, about how you deal with and interact with police. And it does more. I'm a little upset today. But finally, I think the positive is that I was in Portland last week during the protest. And what I saw there were tons of people. But yes, this is a city where you have a small amount of black people. But I saw hundreds of white people standing up. And that, to me, is a positive. I know we can always do more. But the fact that I saw that visibly, I'm like, okay, so at least these people get it to the point where they can. But also there's a privilege to that because I saw a white female screaming at a cop. I know I can't do that. I can't go into a cop's face and yell at him and you know,
and walk away
with my life.
Okay? Yeah.
So I mean, I think that is a positive that, you know, even my brother-in-law, who's a white male, came to me and he just wanted to see how I was doing. I'm like, I'm doing all right, man. But at least there's something going on now to where, okay, there's a certain segment that's getting it. But they need to do something about it as well. So that's all I got to say, and I really appreciate you guys' show.
Well, we appreciate you calling. And my college boyfriend went through the police academy. He wanted to be a doctor, and then he changed his mind and decided he wanted to be a police officer, which was funny because all during our college time, we were always stopped for no good reason, you know, and just harassed. And I applauded him, but then he told me the stories of trying to survive. This is in St. Louis, you all, you know, and you to come out with your soul intact, Aaron, is impressive, you know, because there is no room for a group of honest people to really operate in and to make the kinds of heartfelt and soulful reform that needs to be done in some of these departments. And I applaud you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Aaron. You mentioned your encouragement by attending the protests in Portland and seeing many people. In that spirit, I want to share with the audience that there is an action that's taking place this Monday. Oh, this happened yesterday. Today's Monday, right?
Right, today is Monday.
Okay, yeah, at noon. Sponsored by the Portland chapter of Showing Up for Racial Justice. It will gather at noon at the Justice Center on the call for immediate end to police violence and call for white people to take action for racial justice. The action taking place on Monday will be calling for removal of the officers who wrongfully murdered Portland community members Keaton Otis, Aaron Campbell, James Chassie Jr., James Jahar Perez, and Kendra James, and into violence by police towards black and brown people, and for white people to organize for racial justice and end and racism. And this will take place at the Justice Center's at noon. That is located at 1120 Southwest 3rd Avenue in Portland. And Showing Up for Racial Justice, or SURGE, is an organization of white people here in the Portland area who show up, take action, and organize to end racism. So that is something white people can do today.
Yes, indeed. And we're going to go to our next caller. Good morning, Brian. You're on the air.
Good morning. Well, you know, it's a sad day, and it's just another sad day, and they keep getting sadder and sadder, you know, as far as I'm concerned. You know, and I'd like to point out that, you know, the world has definitely been watching us, even though, you know, we probably think it was, you know, we minimalize it. But, you know, the travel warnings have gone out now.
Oh, yes.
You know, the Bahamas government has issued travel warnings along with Dubai. And those are the first ones. And they're going to multiply. And you know, the thing is like, if we don't see ourselves slipping into a police state, I mean, a severe police state, we've lost concept of what's going on, and you know, the world can see it. They've seen it for a long time. You know, England, as conservative as they become, they're going to try and you know, put some consequences in front of Tony Blair for what he did with his policies in Iraq. We have to bring these people who are creating this situation, and there are people who are creating this situation, the Koch brothers, you know, the Bush family, all of it. We have to bring some consequences to these people. And if we do not, and if we do not bring some consequences to our own police force in Portland here, including, as the gentleman said, and I've been harping on for years, the man who is training our people to be policemen, who is an avowed Nazi. You know, there are pictures of him in Nazi uniform. You know, I mean, he put a statue up in the park. If we do not bring people like that to justice and get them out of the public, you know, domain where they are able to influence other people, from Portland all the way up to the government level and into our corporations, you know, if we keep driving their car and using their oil, we are contributing to them doing exactly what they want with us. And I know, I'm sorry for the preaching there, but, you know, we are sinking quickly into a police state. And it's not, we're not going to be able to protest in a year or two.
So Brian, I appreciate,
I'm sorry.
No, certainly those are words that need to be said and heard, and I appreciate those so very much. I was wondering if you could address the issue about what type of conversations you have with your children, mm-hmm. or children in your life around
and family members in your circle.
Okay, I'll tell you what. I don't have any children. I'm 57 years old. I've never been able to. I do medical health care, mm-hmm. and I've never been able to address these situations. You know, because I've never had any kids. But I do talk to people all the time. And it's sad, but most people are actually so caught up in what they're doing. And you've heard this before, from day to day, of just making a living and just getting by and getting their kids through school and trying to navigate this impossible system, you know, to put food on the table, that, you know, it's just... they don't have time to even think about, well, I'm driving this car that's run by a company that's contributing to this, you know, on and on. They don't, you know, it gets to the point where they just become numb, you know. And I think that's the powers that be, you know. It's a matter, I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it's a matter of simple social engineering, is we're going to just get the market until we do exactly what we want. And, you know, frankly, until we put all this stuff down and figure out where it's coming from, you know, we're not going to be okay. You know, and yeah, I don't have kids, but, you know, I just, any young person that I talk to, you know, I tell them, first of all, besides this, you should never listen to anybody over 50, you know. And you know, I just, you know, and I try and, you know, alert people to the dangers of this old established, and I'll have to say it, it's a white minority rule in this country, and they are the minority, but they are ruling. And it's really sad. I don't know what to say to young people. I apologize a lot for my generation.
Okay. Well,
anyway, you guys, I'll leave it there.
No. Well, well, thank you so much, Brian, for sharing and for your words.
Have a good one.
You too. Our number's here on KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. Coming up at 9 a.m. is the OMO Variety Hour. Please stay tuned. Our number's here are 503-231-8187, and we're talking about our country, but particularly wondering what parents or teachers, what type of conversations you have or are having with your children about
situation, about violence, about
racism
and police brutality. And one of the challenges is that you can have 10 points to remember, but that guarantees nothing. Mm-hmm. I can see an officer coming for whatever reason to encounter me, engage me, and I can decide, just look, you know, I'm just gonna cut to the chase. I'm just gonna lay down on the ground, face down, hands out, legs spread, you'll be done. That doesn't guarantee that I'm going to get up from that encounter, because we have seen that some officers have decided that just means you're easier to shoot. And yes, that is a graphic illustration. It is not hyperbole, however, because we have seen it happen. And the question is, in face of such effusive violence, how do you tell anyone how to be safe? How do you present the threat in such a way that it's taken seriously and it's taken to heart and it doesn't break the spirit? Because we want children who can dream and who can dare and who can do. We don't want to break their spirits, yet we live in a world where if you are a black or brown, especially male, but not necessarily, you may not emerge from an engagement or encounter with law enforcement alive. And this is even if you're innocent of having done anything wrong. And I know Aaron mentioned what's going on, because it seems to be the more we learn about brutality, about racism, about the overrepresentation of people of color, and especially blacks, in law enforcement, the more we seem to have shootings and killings, and even of unarmed children.
Tamar Rice was 12 years old and playing in the playground when he was shot and killed. Let's go to our callers. Next up is Francis. Good morning, Francis, what type of conversations do you have with your children or when they were younger?
Well, first I'd like to say right now that my heart is broken, and it's been broken for a long time. I don't believe that a mother or a father should ever, ever have to have those conversations with their children if we were truly living in a free country. Having lived in the gentrified Northeast Portland, when it was being gentrified and criminalized, I would like to say that some people, some communities in our country have been living under a police state for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. Our community was targeted, literally targeted, by the Bureau of Housing and Development for, they'd had people walking around looking for building code violations, looking for them, not having them be reported, looking for them. We could go on and on and on. The police, to me, are the symptom of a society that has become very, very, very callous and has been so for quite some time. And the racism isn't just in the police department. It's when my children were coming up, they're mixed race. I noticed right away that the negative expectations that they encountered every day they walked into a Portland public school. And this was coming from administration, staff, whomever. I remember when I was a volunteer teaching reading one-on-one at Vernon School, and when I was to meet a young first grader for the first time, the conversation about him was what a troublemaker he was. Yes. And when I met this young man, this bright, beautiful, charming leader, I was appalled at the way that these other people had described him to me before I even met him. So, you know, everyone, my children have encountered racial profiling on so many occasions that I can't even tell you how many there have been. One time, my young son, when he first started looking like a young man in his own neighborhood, the only neighborhood he'd ever lived in his whole entire life, was made at gunpoint to get on his knees, put his hands behind his head, and walk backwards. And then at gunpoint, a police officer frisked him. And that's what 12 years old. So people can talk all they want to about whatever they want to, but it is time right now for some serious truth and reconciliation, and it needs to start nationally, and it needs to be nationwide. Because this, and then in the meantime, our president is having to defend dropping more bombs in the Middle East, where more brown people are being killed, and talked about as if they were, one person even referred to the ones that drowned in Libya as cockroaches. Now this is real, and this is heartbreaking, and it is wrong. And we need to do something about it seriously, in peace and love. The president said that the ISIS knows nothing but killing. Is that all we know? Do we have to play that same game? We need to get out of the war business, the military business, the prison industry immediately.
Well, thank you for your call, Francis. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Michael.
Hey, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. You know, first of all, I listened to this white guy talk the other day on the radio, and he said something that I actually agree with. He said the problem with police shooting today is the word impunity. He said that's the problem, because police can kill you with impunity. And as long as there is impunity, they're going to keep doing it. No matter how much you pray, how much you march, whatever you say, you got to get rid of impunity. There has to be consequences. And until that happens, everything else is just rhetoric. I have a child. She don't believe me. She's under the illusion that the police is the good guys.
How old is your daughter?
She's 22 years old.
Okay.
And she's never had any encounter.
Okay.
And she's brainwashed. She's at a stage right now where we were when we were kids, when we believed in Santa Claus. So until one day you get that rude awakening that Santa Claus is a myth, she's going to, you know, go along in society like most people that never had any encounters with the police, and they're going to believe in that myth that they are all the good guys. I'm not saying that they're all bad, but, you know, they operate under a structure that is purely racist. And, you know, I just look at this society the same way I look at Germany back in the 30s. It's the same thing, except they had used the Jews as their scapegoat, and in this society they're using black people, and if you want to, you know, call out Trump, he's using the Mexicans. But it's still the same society. And you got to understand that Hitler came from a democratic society. And it's easy to have these kind of problems in a democratic society because these people operate under the illusion that we're free. There's freedom, there's democracy. And you know that back in the Roman days, you know, democracy existed, but 90% of the people in Rome were slaves. So these people operate under these illusions. So that's my take on it. And
I want to ask you a little bit more in terms of, you know, earlier you mentioned in terms of your daughter and, you know, she's been brainwashed. What's the nature of your conversations with her? And
right.
And also, do you worry about her because she's living under this illusion that everything's all right?
I'm concerned about her spirit getting broken with just one encounter.
It's going to happen. I think she's gradually seeing what I say is true because, you know, the more negative encounters she has with racism, you know, she goes back and she sees that what I've been saying is true. You know, it's a slow process because, like I said, she hasn't had a lot of negative encounters out there.
Okay.
Wow, I lost my train of thought on what I was going to say. But, oh, yeah, you know, the black community, each time these things happen and the police get off with impunity, a segment of the black population become radicalized. And I think that's the part of all of this narrative that this system seems to don't understand is that they've got too many fronts going on. They're battling they have too many battles going on in the world with brown-skinned people. And it's going to be the same thing that happened to Hitler. His demise was he had too many battles going on, too many fronts. And I think in this capitalistic society, they're creating too many fronts. They're going to have too many battles, and when they all rail up at one time, it's going to be their downfall.
Okay,
anyway, right.
Talk to you later.
Okay. All right, thanks. Imperial overreach.
Yeah, overreach, yes.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who are interested, and I think Michael and other callers mentioned, you know, the situation here in Portland, the monthly vigil for Keating Otis takes place tomorrow, July 12th, at 6th and Holiday. Keaton was shot and murdered by Portland police when he was stopped 6 years ago for, quote, looking like a gangster. He was shot 23 times after being tased while seated in his driver's seat. Later, police said that he had a gun, but the gun has not yet been produced. So that takes place at 6th and Holiday. Forgot what time it takes place, like 5-6 o'clock. Well, I'll find that out.
We'll have to find out.
But that's another action that you can participate in. You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio, with Celeste Carey, and I am honored to be her co-host. My name is Cecil Prescott. And let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Nancy.
Good morning. I've had a lot of experience. I had my daughter at Joseph Meek School, which has subsequently been closed, which is primarily in the Northeast population of students, and I wanted her to have that rich experience of cross-cultural people and knowing them from their souls, from their music, from their poetry. She was able to have that experience, and since they've closed that school, because we as parents all got together, and my daughter is part Italian, and she can look in the summer as if she's a person of color, and we got together for the rights of the students to be treated equally, and we did get some results in that process, and there was a lot of conversation within the community and at the school district about what treatment there is. We have a state that just announced that white is right by allowing Warren Buffett to take over PacifiCorp, and now the major manufacturing corporation, Precision Castparts, in Southeast. So Southeast and Northeast, he bought it after knowing the toxins that he is smearing all over the color communities, and this is not being attended to by our regulators. So it's a whole cycle of viciousness that has to be stopped, and we have to start at the level that we can. And we've gotten results, but we need a lot better results by kicking out and removing the license of Warren Buffett, who also owns Pacific Corp, and suppresses the economies of local businesses by charging excess amounts. And he has bought this major manufacturing corporation, and he tends to lay off employees. He moved the headquarters of Pacific Corp, which was primarily minority employed, and moved it to Utah.
So before you continue, and that's very important, I want to get back to in terms of your daughter and her experience at Joseph Meeks. What type of conversations you had with her about racism while she was growing?
Right.
Well, she attended the different meetings that were held at the school for all ages, and she started some of the conversation herself. She was a pretty bright kid, still is. And she was able to better understand the conditions that cause certain reactions within a community and how difficult that can become. And she has a much more balanced view of the interrelations that can be so subtle sometimes and yet so obvious at other times and lead to horrific things that we're seeing going on today. I am on the advisory board for police. The federal court ordered, Judge Simon ordered, that this city do something about the treatment of mentally ill as well as racial profiling. And we're trying to do that, but we're being suppressed in many ways there, and we are doing our best efforts to get that switched. And some things are starting to happen in that direction, but the police department is a total mess. So as far as my daughter, she is engaged in many ways in her business practices through a credit union to make sure that there is fair treatment all around. And that's one of the results of the ways that I have, through the public system, tried to get the best mixed education for her. So I hope that makes sense.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. But thank you so much.
You're welcome.
You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio, with Celeste and Cecil. At 9 is the OMO Variety Hour. A program of social and political commentary from a socialist feminist perspective. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia News and Headlines and Commentary. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein's interview Rob Justice, founder of Join, about the current housing crisis in Portland. At 11 on Health Watch, Ellen Goldsmith interviews Kaven Lee Morgan, founder of Peace in Schools, about the first four-graded high school mindfulness course in the nation. 11:30 is Health and Healthcare Forum with Roberta Hall, who will speak with Janice Stinger about her book, The Perfect Formula Diet, a diet based on whole planet foods, what preparing it entails, and how it is a benefit. Thank you, KBOO member, for your gracious support. Please tune in and support us each and every day, and this Thursday especially, at July 14th, during our one-day membership drive, the KBOO-a-thon, from 6 a.m. Thursday until 7 a.m. Friday.
All right. And we want to thank our engineer, Steve. He nailed down the time for the Keaton Otis Vigil, which is at 6 p.m. at Halsey and 6th Avenue here in Portland.
Let's go to our next caller.
Good morning, Sonny.
Good morning. Good morning to you, too. Sad days with, sadly, more sad days to come, which we are going to have to stand through. And is Steve the fellow that answers the phone also?
Yes.
He sure has a beautiful voice himself. I would, I could listen to his phone. I mean, I could listen to his voice all day long.
Okay, Steve.
Sometimes I call, I think, just to hear his voice. Okay. But I don't want him to get upset about that. I'm just, you know. Anyway, yeah, and he does a lovely job, and you all do lovely. We're so, it's nice to have you all. It really is. And the lovely hearts that have called in and call in. And here is an idea, and I think it could be something that will help some young people if they take it on, get to college, because I think people want this. I think we need T-shirts that just say, one people, so that they can see our numbers.
to begin with, and we can hearten one another. And when we're wearing our One People t-shirts, we're saying, hi, hello, I want to know you. I want you to know I'm with you. I want you to know that I'm in your country. You're in my country. This is our country. We're one people. And just to keep that going, because there's a long road ahead of us, and the road that we're on right now looks like, as the unrest continues for good reason, it will be harder to recruit good cops. And that's part of the idea, is that, you know, just keep things going, and the good cops will also give up because, you know, it's pretty rough. And then the end of that story is, just as the fellow spoke before, I think it was Michael, Americans aren't even being told how really, really angry China is over the South Seas thing, I think, with Japan. China said that it's arming up.
Okay, I don't think Michael talked about China, but...
Well, wait, what I'm saying is Russia is buzzing our aircraft carriers, and an American diplomat was tackled and attacked by a security guard the other day at one of the embassies, I think, in Russia.
And that's very important, but
that has nothing to do.
I want you to answer, you know, the question is, is what we tell our children about racism, and share us your conversation.
My kids have seen the racism as a half Indian. I've had Amtrak train employees that have thrown money back at me in my face, not wanted to put it in my hand. They've seen me grabbed by a stranger around my neck and hauled down the shopping aisle in a grocery store, and no one would help me. And frankly, it doesn't make much impression upon my sons, because they feel that they're still living in this better world, and I realize, no, we're still amidst the problems, and sometimes people can see it right in front of their eyes and they still don't see it. Wow. But the last thing I was going to say is, yes, Americans are not paying attention, and those who look away right now at what's happening to their own fellow citizens in the streets are still going to meet up with that same mentality looking at them, because America is making a lot of terrible mistakes. That's all.
All right.
But wait, I had one last thing to say.
Well, we got another caller, and we're out of time, so I'm really sorry. And we have just enough time to go to our last caller. Good morning, Mitch. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you, Celeste and Cecil, for listening. And your callers are unusual in being historically aware and informed, and also being analytical. I think one of the reasons there's a difficulty in telling our children about racism and other institutional corruption-based problems in our society is that we have, with the exception of KABU, a corporate-captured media that doesn't allow dots to be connected. And so with all of the stories about the coast-to-coast crisis in confidence in law enforcement, we had local papers like the Portland Tribune covering what was happening to the Portland Police Department chief as if it was not at all connected to the San Francisco police chief having to resign, to three Oakland police chiefs having to resign in 9 days, to stories across the country. And when I wrote to the Portland Tribune saying, why don't you connect the dots and at least place the Portland PD scandal in proper context, they removed my comment. And I didn't even make any conspiratorial connections. I just said, you need the context of what's going on elsewhere.
Yes.
And they wouldn't run it. They ran it as if what was happening in Portland, and people who don't lift their head up and look beyond that, don't know that there is a coast-to-coast crisis of confidence in law enforcement. And a week after they removed my comment, we saw what happened in Louisiana and Minnesota.
Wow. Hey, and you're so accurate, and we need to continue to connect those dots.
Keep on doing, you guys.
Okay, you too. Thank you for your call. You've been listening to More Talk Radio with Celeste Carey and with Cecil Charles Prescott. Stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour. Thank you for joining us today. We will speak with you next week.
The 36th Annual Cathedral Park Jazz Festival is almost here, and KABU will once again be carrying it live Saturday, July 16. The fun begins Friday night with blues artists such as Ken Emerson and Sister Mercy. Saturday and Sunday will deliver some of Portland's finest: Dan Balmer, Highwater Jazz Band, Joe Manis, Eric Lewis, Tim Wilcox, Mel Brown, Farnell Newton, and more. That's July 15th, 16th, and 17th under the St. John's Bridge at Cathedral Park, the longest-running music festival in Portland, brought to you by the Jazz Society of Oregon and KABU. Full details at cpjazz.com.
Tune into KABU for our 25-hour fundraising extravaganza of special programming and community celebration. Tune in at 8 a.m. for Voices from the Edge with Joanne Hardesty. Her guest will be retired Seattle City Council member Nick Licata, author of the new book, Becoming a Citizen Activist: Stories, Strategies, and Advice for Changing Our World. Again, that's 6 a.m. on July 14th through 7 a.m. on July 15th to support your community radio station, KBOO Portland.